This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ, what a wild story around Ivan Fedotov, the Philadelphia Flyers goalie. He had signed a contract in 2022 in anticipation of joining the team, and then gets ushered into military service in Russia. I remember back then it was a wild time, and now all of a sudden he is available and back in, not even back, he's in Philadelphia. By the time you'll get this podcast, he'll have spoken to media. What can you say about the story? What's next for this goaltender? Just happy that he's in North America and he's able to play with the Flyers franchise, but what a wild story.
Yeah, and timing is pretty fascinating because, you know, Philadelphia is down to a handful of games left in the regular season, and Ivan Fedotov is due to become an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. And so, you know, I think the plan, of course, is for them to start working with him, get eyes of their own on him, not just on game footage, perhaps, you know, play him. But, you know, there's still a situation about whether he's signed for next year. Does he hit the open market? And, you know, from just the hockey perspective, pretty intriguing player who's had a lot of success everywhere he's played. He won a gold medal in 2022 as the goaltender of record at that event. He's been one of the best regarded, if not the best regarded, goaltender in Russia now for a few years. 6'8", which, you know, if you see the trend of the way goaltending's going in the league, that's a positive in the box. But you know, then you say, what can they expect from him in this short a time? They're in a playoff race. It is an unusual story, and it's 9 years after they drafted him, right? And you know, as you mentioned, they tried to bring him over in 2022, ends up missing the entire 2022-23 season while serving that military service in Russia. He returned this year and played for CSKA Moscow. That's after the IIHF last summer had a ruling that the Flyers contract was the legal one. So he played technically in the eyes of international hockey in a legal contract this year in Russia. So yes, I think it's a story that's had a lot of twists and turns. He kind of gets dropped into a very interesting time in the Flyers net, an interesting time of their season. And, you know, he, at the end of the day, we're a hockey podcast. He's a pretty intriguing player, but I don't know what can be expected, how much reasonably the Flyers can learn. And, you know, they do have a decision. They have a couple decisions this summer, but one of them would be what becomes of Fedotov. Obviously, we don't know if Carter Hart's going to get a qualifying offer by the date in June that he's supposed to. And so there's a lot of moving pieces in the Flyers' crease, but, you know, needless to say, I think they're pretty happy to get him over to North America finally, to at least have any sort of chance to gauge where he might be at and what his NHL future might be.
I wonder how many games he gets in between now and the end of the season, and if this Flyers team makes the playoffs, if he plays a part in their plans.
Well, there's that, and you know, the Flyers haven't been getting any saves lately, right? I mean, I don't know how much you could expect. I mean, the guy comes over, he's never played North American hockey. There's 8 games left in the regular season. They're obviously games that carry high stakes. Like, it's not an ideal spot to be thrown into, you know, if he does get to play even, you know, multiple games here down the stretch. But, you know, the latest John Tortorella dust up, if you call it, with the media, I'm sure you saw earlier this week, he apologized. You know, he'd been asked about Felix Sandstrom's performance in a game last weekend, and he walked off the podium without giving an answer and ended up apologizing for that. I mean, you know, you don't want to make light of it, but the Flyers crease has been sort of a cursed place. It seems, I mean, it's just been a very difficult market on goaltenders, and not a place that a lot of goalies have thrived. I mean, you go back over a huge number of years, the Brizgalov thing.
At least 40 years.
Yeah, and the Brizgalov thing was once upon a time going to solve it, and you know, we know what happened then. You know, it's just, it feels like somehow organizations get something in their DNA and they're trying to solve the same problem, or they have a certain style. And so, yeah, I don't really know what to expect from the player. I mean, you can go to, you know, Elite Prospects and look up, you know, all his numbers, and there's some pretty impressive numbers there and achievements for Ivan Fedotov. But, you know, to arrive this late in March and potentially be playing like the biggest games of the season, like, it seems like that's at least a possibility, because they've struggled. They've had some injuries. And then obviously the Carter Hart situation, where he left the team on personal leave this year while the Hockey Canada, you know, proceedings enter the court. So it's, I guess it's all upside, because if it doesn't go well for Fedotov this year, I mean, are you really going to hold it against him? But it's very unusual circumstances. I do know the Flyers, though. I mean, obviously they've liked the player. If in an alternate universe where you don't have the Russia-Ukraine situation, and then whatever machinations in Russia led to him being essentially arrested and sent to a military camp in a far region of their country, you know, in alternate universe, he's in Philadelphia, you know, in the spring/fall of 2022, and he's coming to the end of his second NHL season, and maybe he's a known product by now. Instead, you know, a couple months before he can be an unrestricted free agent, they're going to get at least some kind of quick look at him here.
I wonder, even if he, I mean, I'll ask the opposite of the last question I asked, but if he doesn't get to play in any games, does the team like him enough to at least sign him to another contract this offseason?
I think there's a path to that. And, you know, my sense is that he, it's not as though he's not trying to use the leverage of unrestricted free agency here. I mean, his situation is obviously much bigger than the NHL's collective bargaining agreement rules. And, you know, the reason he can be a UFA is because he's 27 years old. You know, I think he wants to ideally turn this into an NHL career, right? He wants, and, you know, I don't think there's certainly no issue with him in Philadelphia. Again, this isn't the sort of situation where he's playing hardball and trying to end up somewhere else. It's just, I think in a strange way, I think it's a harder decision for the team, because look, any organization only has so many goaltending slots. Obviously the Flyers do have some young prospects at that position. I think they're in the process of bringing over another Belarusian goaltender that they drafted in the third round a couple of years ago to join the organization. So there's a lot of sort of moving parts there, and you know, you have to make those sort of decisions. You know, I think you can make that call, because if he doesn't play, or if he plays one game, or, you know, like if he has minimal impact in the immediate term, they could still at least get on the ice with him, have their coaches really start to work with the player. You know, I think that you're not talking, he's not signing a $5 million contract for next season. I mean, there's probably a low risk, you know, solution where, you know, they're able to extend him and, you know, have next year be really his first full NHL season, but we'll have to see how that goes. I mean, I don't know. As I say, I know the Flyers like him, and I know that he wants to be there, but there's also, you know, the realities of only being able to carry so many goalies, and who knows how this is going to go. But I think, you know, given all the visa and sort of paperwork stuff that's had to gone on here, obviously he had his contract terminated by CSKA Moscow this week. I mean, they've put a lot of work into getting him here. So I think just because of that fact, it's reasonable to conclude they'll find a way to keep him around for at least one more year to get eyes on him.
Any other question, anything else you want to mention about Ivan that I didn't ask you, anything to do with how he got to North America or anything else we didn't get to?
No, I know that they're sort of keeping it a little bit secret how he got here. I mean, in terms of the route he traveled or what had to happen for it to go on. I mean, we know the political situation in the world right now, with Russia still, you know, in an active war with Ukraine that it initiated, with Russian athletes still forbidden from, you know, there's a world championship coming up in Prague in May, men's world championship that Russian athletes won't be able to participate in. They're not going to be part of a four nations tournament the league's going to have. I mean, this is a very volatile time in the world. And so I don't know exactly how he got here or everything that went on. I you know, have been to Russia a number of times in my life prior to this conflict. And I will say that it's a sort of place that money can solve a lot of problems for you. And so, you know, I'm sure that there was some kind of deal reached to get him over here in some way, shape or form. You know, I think it is an interesting situation. And I do think they're going to give him a chance to play. I mean, that's ultimately, you go to all this length, I don't think it's just to see him in practice, right? I mean, so I suppose those decisions have to be made with how the playoff races go. I mean, Philadelphia's they're clinging to a spot right now, but you know, they've got Washington that's kind of surged a little bit. Obviously Detroit's still there. That could potentially knock them out of a wild card spot if Washington passes them and drops them to wild card positioning. So there's a lot of moving parts, and it's never boring in Philadelphia. I can say that much. It's just that kind of team where it seems like there's always something going on. And I think this is a big moment for the organization. I mean, if let's take the optimistic view, he's a 7th round pick 9 years ago. I mean, if he becomes a player for them, what a find and what a set of circumstances to have to endure in order to have them come over to North America and play. It almost calls back to, you know, the path, you know, McGillney took to, I mean, it's not quite the same political climate, but, you know, a lot of players had to basically defect in the late 80s, early 90s to come play the NHL. Some of those players became Hall of Fame type of players. Even Evgeny Malkin had to basically escape his contract at the time with Magnitogorsk when he first joined the Penguins. You know, it was, I believe it all went down in Helsinki. They were there for a tournament or for a game or something like that, and he was whisked away in the night. And so, you know, might be some, maybe when the story's told on this one, when there's a little bit of safety and time and distance, there'll be that kind of covert operation that had to go on in order to get him here. I'm not entirely sure of that, though, as we're talking today.
For sure. And you're right. It is never boring in Philadelphia. I wonder where this story will rank in terms of the storylines for the Philadelphia Flyers at season's end, because
I should mention too, because I've seen a bunch of people like on my Twitter feed and stuff when I've been tweeting with this, like he signed that contract in 2022, and so that was supposed to be for 2022-23 season. He's then forced into Russian military service. Essentially, the contract was told, it's called, but it means pushed to this season, and so he's been on the Flyers reserve list. You know, his contract has been one of their 50 all along. Like, there's no restrictions on how much he could play. I mean, he could come in and he could play every game the Flyers have for the rest of the season if the team would want to put him into that, including the playoffs. And so, you know, I think that I saw some people debating like what's, there's no, you know, I checked with the league, there's no extra, you know, roadblocks or issues with that. So he's fully under contract, and he can play as much or as little as the Flyers, you know, want to circle his number and put him in the lineup.
Okay, we'll leave it there. I think we're going to end up talking a lot about coaches on this episode. You mentioned John Tortorella in that press conference he had this week, where he gave that stare when describing Felix Sandstrom's performance. At least he apologized for that. But it seems as if the anger kind of spread over to the Atlantic division. I mean, it feels as if a lot of people were angry for different reasons this week, but especially in the Atlantic division, if you were coaching, who do you think was madder between these three gentlemen? Jim Montgomery in Boston, who felt his players weren't giving it enough of a go in practice, and then after a game says his team isn't ready for the playoffs. Sheldon Keefe, who called out a bunch of his own players, including his own captain, John Tavares. Or Paul Maurice, who after a game on Thursday was asked a question about making the playoffs, and he said, and I quote, "Today is free quote effing day. Take whatever you think I might say and use it. I won't bitch about it."
I think Jim Montgomery was probably the most angry because, you know, he stops practice during a first drill. He can be heard by the reporters that were in the building just berating the team and then makes them skate. You know, The two other examples, Maurice, after the loss to the Islanders on Thursday night, I mean, he's frustrated with his team. He's got a great dry sense of humor. I've never, of all the coaches' answers and all the years that we've both been doing this, man, I've never heard a coach basically say, like, make up whatever quote you want, and I'm not going to hold it against you, because I just, he didn't want to give his own thoughts, right? That was his way of not sharing his thoughts, but making the point about how frustrated he was. And in Keefe's case, on Tuesday, the Leafs, you know, had a great first period, maybe their best individual period of the season against New Jersey. Got sloppy from there, lost to the Devils in a game that just was untidy all around. He called it an immature game. I'd say, you know, everything in Toronto gets dialed up a few notches. My view of it in watching the press conference was he singled out a few players, including his top players, Matthews, Nylander, and Captain John Tavares, as you mentioned, by name. But even on the Keefe meter, that might not have been as mad as he's been in the last 3 weeks. Like, they had a loss in Philadelphia, actually, where he was quite terse, and it the scrum got cut off pretty abruptly after a loss there that he wasn't happy with. And so I think this week, if we did like the who's angriest a meter of the teams that are the top three spots in the Atlantic, it's probably the Bruins coach, Jim Montgomery. But, you know, let's step back a minute and gauge why. I mean, all these gentlemen are looking at the calendar. And if you can believe it, Julian, the playoffs start 3 weeks from Saturday. So we are 3 weeks, just smidge over as we're recording this, 3 weeks from the start of Stanley Cup playoffs. That's game one, by the way. The original NHL calendar had the playoffs starting Monday, April 22nd. It's since been moved up to Saturday, April 20th. I would expect the Leafs to play that night, for example, if you're listening.
Any reason for that, by the way? I had heard about that.
Well, a couple reasons. The entire East, even though the regular season ends on the 18th of April, the entire East is done on the 17th. So there actually is a two full day break before the Eastern teams that start on the 20th start the playoffs. And I think it just allows everything to move up. Plus, do you really want to leave a weekend in April free of any hockey? Like it's kind of unusual. Like typically, if you look back over time, the NHL regular season usually ends on a Saturday and then the playoffs get going, you know, into the next week, sometimes Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday. But, you know, this way they're compressing it back a little bit, gives them a little more freedom to get through the playoffs. And I don't have the date sitting right in front of me.
Yep, I know exactly what you're going to say. Some Leafs news has come down the wire just as you're making your point here. Do you want me to say it or do you want to do it?
You got it.
Simo Benoit signing a 3-year extension, $1.35 million is the AAV. Leafs defenseman Simo Benoit signing a 3-year contract extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And I'd say one of the really positive points of this week's season.
Seems like he's fit, you know, on that back line.
I know he played extensively last year in Anaheim. Obviously, the Ducks did not have a great season. He played over 70 games for them. He came to camp and was injured initially this year. And so it didn't look like he had a great fit. He signed as a, you know, bit of an extra defenseman, I would say, like depth for the Leafs. And because of injuries and illnesses and all sorts of situations that have come on the season, he's become a regular member of the team. And even here after acquiring two more defensemen at the trade deadline, you know, he still found a semi-regular spot in the lineup. So, you know, obviously good security for him, you know, someone who wasn't qualified last year by the Ducks after playing 70 odd games, has never had, you know, 3-year guaranteed money deal, you know, since being an entry-level player. And, you know, I think useful depth for the Leafs. They really like this hard edge, you know, third pairing guy. We're not talking about him getting Norris votes or anything like that, but I think he's been very, very useful. Plays with a little bit of physicality that Brad Treliving would appreciate as Leafs general manager. So, and you know, I know these negotiations have actually gone on for quite some time now, and there is a real give and take. And, you know, it's tough, I'm sure, as a player like Benoit. I mean, you want to maximize your value. You don't want to sell these years if you're going to look back and be like, man, I could have made a lot more money. But at the same time, he's obviously earned the trust of the organization. He knows he's in a good spot. He knows somewhere. If you look at the Leafs blue line, I mean, they got TJ Brody is coming up as a UFA, you know, potentially unlikely to be back. Mark Giordano was likely getting to the end of the road. His contract expires this year. I mean, there's going to be opportunity on this blue line. You know, they trade for Labushkin and Edmondson, but no guarantee either of those guys, you know, is extended and stays beyond just this playoff run. And so I think there's going to be minutes there for Benoit, and obviously they like him. And, you know, $1.35 million it's nice guaranteed money, but from a Leafs organizational perspective, it's not breaking the bank. And even if they get to a point where for next year it doesn't go so well for whatever reason, you could bury 1.15 of that million into the minors. So been a funny season in Toronto. Like, obviously the regular season, everyone's waiting for the playoffs, right? Like, I don't think anyone's getting too excited or not by, you know, what's happened during this year. But, you know, guys like Bobby McMahon, who got a 2-year extension, you know, last month, and Simon Benoit have been sort of wins around the margins, I guess, for a team that needs a few of those because of how much is paid to the core players.
Okay. I imagine Sheldon Keefe will see this and be in a much better mood than he's been in the last few days.
Yeah. Well, he was in a pretty good mood Thursday night. You know, the Leafs had a pretty thorough win over Washington. And I guess, you know, if we get back to that thread we were pulling on earlier, after sort of calling out, singling out, however you want to frame it, his players, you know, those guys all responded. And, you know, that was, there wasn't much doubt in that game against the Capitals. The Leafs, you know, got a lead, didn't sit back and, you know, get barraged by shots after, you know, they kept pushing the pace and building on the lead. And, you know, it wasn't a very competitive game in the end. And, you know, the Capitals have been giving it, like, they've been in playoff chase mode for like 2 months. And so I think it's only reasonable that the emotional tank only has so much energy. I saw TJ Oshie told the reporters after the game, he felt like it was just one of those games where the grind of what they've been through, it caught up to them a little bit. But Keith was certainly in a, he was in a pretty joking mood. Actually, I was at the press conference last night after the game. You know, Tyler Bertuzzi is another story that's come on really well for the Leafs here. He had 6 goals into February and he scored 12 goals in his last 17 games. So he's now up to 18. So he's basically going to probably get a 20, you know, maybe a couple more goal season. And that's probably what you would expect, but he's done it in a way you didn't expect because he struggled in, you know, production wise for so much of the year. And, you know, Keith was asked about that and he's like, well, you got to talk about puck luck. Cause he's like, he scored a goal last night on Charlie Lindgren from behind the goal line. He's like, before this, he was missing them into an empty net from above the goal line. So, you know, and he was saying that he wasn't, it was meant to be get a chuckle from everyone, but wasn't necessarily being literal. But it's, you know, as we were talking about the schedule and the coaches, like, I just think there's so much pressure in all those situations. You know, it's almost so obvious we don't have to spell it out, but the Panthers went to a cup final last year and have been one of the top teams in the league. The Bruins have been in the mix forever, you know, want to avenge last season's first round loss to Florida. Toronto's Toronto, you know, one series victory out of the last 7-8 years with this group. Still looking for a long playoff run, and these teams are all going to have to go through each other. And, you know, obviously if you're behind the bench of one of them, you want to be seeing sort of playoff habits already and mentality and managing the game, and none of them are happy. And at the other side of the division, it's the same thing, Julian. I mean,
yep.
You know, Detroit has really been scuffling and trying to stay in the playoff chase. Buffalo, I don't know if you noticed that we're calling for Don Granato's head this week. You know, some of the local media there and fans, the Sabres, you know, they were on the fringes of the playoff race, but they had a, you know, big game against Ottawa Wednesday night and they're down 4-0 9 minutes in and didn't have much pushback. So it's I think it's a tough league to coach in nowadays. We've already seen so many coaching changes this season. You've got all these people on interim tags. You know, I think it's reasonable to think a team or two that loses in the first round, you know, potentially could be looking at a coaching change. Like, you might see 6 or 7 or 8. I don't know how many it's going to end up being. Coaches switched out of their jobs. And so obviously if you're in one of those jobs, you feel, I'm not saying that Montgomery, Maurice and Keith specifically are reacting the way we've seen them react because they're worried about losing their jobs. But I think there's a high degree of pressure in those jobs and you're trying to make sure their team is in a position to have a long playoff run and have, you know, put off to talk about their job for at least another year.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today's episode of The CJ Show is sponsored by Shopify. Let's name some dynamic teammates who got it done. Gronk and Brady. Pippen and Jordan, Venus and Serena, those are some pretty good ones. What about the perfect teammates when it comes to growing your online business? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global e-commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way up to, did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has you covered. Shopify can also help you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you could sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify also powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it's the global force behind so many brands like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Johnston, all lowercase, shopify.com/Johnston. Now, to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/Johnston. What do you think is Don Granato's future in Buffalo? This is a franchise that has not made the playoffs for over a decade. They thought they'd be at least battling proper for a playoff spot this year, maybe even earlier than that. I mean, this, so many young players have come through that organization. They're rebuilding on top of a rebuild, and they still haven't reached the playoffs. What do you think is next for Granato? Does he stay for next year? Is he the guy to lead them in this next phase in their franchise? What's next for him?
Well, this is where it's hard, right? I mean, last year, Buffalo played right to the last week of the season with reasonable playoff chances. And you have like a big year from Tage Thompson. You know, Alex Tuch looked great. Even Jeff Skinner had a really strong year. I mean, I think you're looking at that team under Granato and you're like, wow, they're like, they didn't make the big, big step, but they took a very measurable step in that season and you know, played meaningful games right to the end. You know, this year has felt like it stagnated a little bit. And so I suppose what they're going to have to do is try to get to the bottom of that. My impression is it's not like Sabres management is looking to fire Don Granato. I don't think they're of that mind. I think they like him. He's still under contract for two seasons beyond this one. He was signed an extension because of some of that growth that was shown, especially for younger players in the organization. They're still a young team, Julian, too. I think they may actually be the youngest in the league on average. If not, they're right near that spot. And, you know, but the problem is, like, you almost have to separate the two things. You want to evaluate the coach specifically if we're talking about his job and what he's done and where they're at. But then there's also the external pressure. I mean, fans there are pissed and they have every right to be. Like, I'm certainly not questioning the fans. I mean, this will be the 13th straight year without a postseason berth. Like, entire kids have been like gone from kindergarten and now they're going to college and never even seen the Sabres play a playoff game. Like, it I believe it might be the longest stretch in NHL history. It's certainly among them. And so under that, when in the larger context, if you're Kevin Adams, if you're in, you know, ownership, Terry Pegula, like, you have to look at absolutely every aspect of the organization and wonder if you can get a little better by making that kind of change. And so it's a long way of saying, I don't get the sense there's an appetite or an urgency to fire Don Granato, but I don't think almost anything can be ruled out. And that's not, I'm not subtexting just Don. I mean, I'm talking about trades. You know, you can't miss the playoffs for 13 straight years and not feel like it can't get to 14, right? And it's a tough division, and there's a whole bunch of things stacked against them. You know, what's ironic about the situation, and this is maybe why I'm not an NHL GM, but I look at the decisions they've made over the last couple seasons, like personnel decisions, the contracts they signed, like, I actually like what they're building there. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people that I talk to in the industry speak extremely highly of Don Granato as a coach. And so, you know, maybe when the dust settles on the year and the coach merry-go-round starts to go, the carousel's spinning, you know, the Sabres are going to have to look at who a potential replacement could be and weigh the pros and cons of that. I think Kevin Adams actually has shown himself to be a GM who's not afraid of a hard decision too, right? I mean, this, we're talking about someone who traded Jack Eichel and I think did reasonably well in the deal, though obviously Eichel hasn't looked back, won a Stanley Cup in Vegas, and it's been a good fit for him. But, you know, I don't know how it's going to play out, but what do you sell there if you're the Sabres? Like, that's what I look at. You know, my old saying, you got to sell winning or you got to sell hope. Like, where is, I don't know if they're going to be good enough to win next year, like win enough to get in the playoffs to like truly take that step. And where do you find hope? Like, man, I don't, I honestly feel for the people there. I spent a lot of time in Buffalo over the years, and it's a great hockey market and it's a passionate sports town, a very proud sports town, and they have just been kicked in the stomach for like a decade.
Decade plus. Ugh. This is a franchise that's had to tear everything down. They got the top pick. They tried to build around him. It didn't work. They flipped away that pick, and now they're starting all over again.
Well,
and
haven't they had three top picks? Like, they had Eichel, they had Rasmus Dahlin, they had Owen Power, they had Sam Reinhardt at number two.
Yes, they did.
Like, it's not even, I know they didn't win the lottery famously when McDavid was there and they were trying to, and Tim Murray, their GM at the time, didn't hide his frustration by that outcome. But my point is you can't even say they've had bad lottery luck. Like, they didn't have the ultimate lottery luck and win McDavid, but they've had a lot of first overall picks. Again, I think they've built a team like all those players want to stay there, right? You've gotten the core to sign 8-year deals. Like, it's not just I don't know. It's tough.
I don't know what you do.
You look at UPL. Like, I know he had a tough game in the Senators game that I was mentioning earlier, and you know, he gets pulled after 8 or 9 minutes. But like, he's even had a strong stretch here. Like, he looks like he could be a goaltender. They got Devon Levi in the fold. Like, It feels, I mean, look, it might be one of those things where once it clicks, it really clicks. But I think the coaching decision is difficult there. I think the personnel decisions are going to be tough. And I don't know. I feel like I've watched several Kevin Adams press conferences over the last 2 years, like, where he's really owned it. It's like, how do you keep owning it? Like, it's hard. Part of what you have to do, obviously, is just make really cold decisions. Not like leave the fan pressure or ownership pressure out the door and like really do what's best, what you believe is best, and like stick to that vision. But the other part of it, this is a business, and part of it, it's narrative, right? Like, part of it is selling a story. And I just don't know what the story is that they're going to be able to sell out of this season, because they just didn't get enough wins on the ice. There's not enough other wins you could point to. It's not like one player took a massive jump. You're like, all right, next year, that guy's going to lead us to the promised land. And so, the easiest thing, unfortunately, if you're a coach, to do is change a coach. So I'm not saying Don Granato will be changed. I don't think that's anyone's intention, but nothing can be off the table when you've had the run that organization has had.
For sure. At least for them. I mean, when they acquired Bowen Byram from Colorado, he looks like he's been fitting just fine on that defense. And at least that looks like a strong point for them in the future. But yeah, something's going to might have to change up front too. Well,
Look at their top four. Right, you got Dahlin, Power, you know, Samuelson's locked in, pretty steady guy, is probably the number four, and Byram, like, and they're all like 22 and under.
That's stacked. That's perfect.
Like, you would think, you know, there's the other aspects of a team, but that's what I'm saying. Like, they got a youngish goaltender who looks like he's promising. They've got all these forward prospects. I don't know. I don't know. It's a hard league. I'll tell you, it's a pretty good advertisement for anyone who's in any market who wants to burn everything to the ground.
That's a good way to put it. Because Sabres fans can be very passionate about that. They know all about burning stuff, and maybe a table have to get involved in that too, but yes.
But Steve could do a great series of trade trees or like origin stories when you look back at it. This all started, they truly tanked for McDavid, right? Like, they had...
Yes.
Close to, you know, bottom five, bottom 10 ever NHL season. They obviously didn't win that lottery. They still got Jack Eichel, pretty good bounce. Not a bad consolation prize in that case. But this all goes back to that time. Like, they just have never been able to get enough traction since then, because you trade away all your good players. You know, I watched the Capitals, and they didn't play a great game in Toronto, the one I saw on Thursday. But, you know, they are having the best of both worlds right now. Like, they have gotten considerably younger. They still have Alex Ovechkin on their roster, who's obviously a franchise cornerstone, chasing an all-time record in the league, like a hallowed record. And they're legitimately in a playoff race, and they're having these young guys be part of that. Like that's, to me, that's the model. If the model does not fall to the bottom of the league, like Edmonton, it took forever and they fell to the bottom of the league and traded absolutely everything useful. I actually think Chicago is going to be an interesting case. It's not a prediction. I don't know what's going to happen there, but because what Chicago did, right, is they traded away players still in their early to mid 20s that were useful, or better than useful. Like, they traded away Alex DeBrincat instead of keeping him, right? They traded away Brandon Hagel. And yeah, they got two first round picks from Tampa, but those players could have insulated like the Bedards and the Korchinskis and the young guys as they came in. And I know they've signed, you know, Nick Foligno's and Jason Dickinson's had a good year. Like they've done, but I just wonder, I think there's danger of removing every layer of protection. Like it's just, it's hard to build up that kind of cadre of useful players. And I get why they did it. They went all in on the draft. And again, it's not a prediction. I think it's too soon to say, but I do worry or wonder, like, are they going to be paying Connor Bedard, you know, as one of the top players in the league before they've had a chance to truly be in a playoff spot? I think it's possible. Because they're a long way away, right? Whereas if you look back and like the Leafs have earned any sort of joke about what's happened in the postseason, but what the Leafs did is the one year that they got really bad and happened to win the Auston Matthews lottery, but they also at that time kept around players like Nazem Kadri, James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak, like players that were very useful NHL players. They didn't just trade every NHL player off their roster. And I think that that helped. It allowed them in Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner's and William Nylander's first full NHL season make the playoffs because they had veteran players that were useful contributors. And obviously over time, those players moved on or were traded, left in free agency, what have you. But I think that that's the way you got to go. And so that's sort of like the Capitals are trying to mimic that. I think the Penguins, we're going to see them try to do something like this. Like it's one thing to trade Jake Gensel. I get why you do it, but you can't strip the roster of every useful player because it could be like five seasons of horrible before you even get a chance to be excited again.
We'll throw the Flames in that too. I mean, contracts kind of play a role in that, but they're not tearing everything down to the studs either.
Right. And that's smart. Like, I think ultimately, as much as we talked, I don't know how many hours, like if we did like a season three, like highlight video of our pod, Julian,
Calgary Flames.
It was so much talk about like all the guys they were going to trade. Should they trade Markstrom? But you're like, there is some wisdom as much as I get that fans like the idea of winning the number one pick. And like, there's some magic in that. Like they're really, that is exciting. Like when we talk about selling something, it's pretty exciting when your team gets to pick a superstar player and you get to sort of watch that person grow up on your team. That's great. But there's a cost. Like you can't, you need that guy to play with someone. That's how I look at it.
Like, you're right.
Like who has Connor Bedard had to play with this year? And I say it with respect to his line mates, but there's just, it's a tough season. Like what's he minus? Like he's minus a billion.
Minus probably isn't that good. And I don't have hockey fizz in front of me to see like who all his line mates have been. But yeah, to your point, it probably would have been a much different situation if you had those players you mentioned earlier to help insulate that situation. The other counterpoint to your argument essentially is that if you look at some of those teams that have won, they still have some, at least a few of those first round picks somewhere littered around their roster. Like a Colorado was bad for a while and Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar are leading the charge. Number one overall pick and a top five pick.
Well, and if you remember that time, like there was rumors about Gabe Landeskog trades and they didn't trade Landeskog. They did trade Matt Duchene, by the end, you know, and Duchene was a number three overall pick, but Duchene wanted out at the end. I think it was both sides that had enough. And I don't remember what they all got in that Duchene trade, but if I recall, it was a pretty good return. So at least, you know, that allowed them to keep going. You know, it's so easy for us. Like we're just sitting, I'm here chilling at my house, sitting behind my microphone going like, like a year's worth of decisions I can boil down to a 12-second clip and be like, why'd they do that? Or that was a good idea. Like the truth is obviously when you're in the manager suite making these decisions or in the front office, like it's a lot easier to Monday morning quarterback, which is what we get to do than actually be the one tasked with those decisions. I just think that there's enough, again, high level, if I'm just being very general, there's enough evidence to suggest stripping your roster down and like doing a total full rebuild, like truly full rebuild is not the way to go. I can't think of many, you know, now we're what, 20 plus years into a cap, right? Or 20 years into a cap basically.
Yeah.
You know, that we now understand, like it was a brand new system. So like what happened in 2008 wasn't really comparable to what happened in 2002, even though only 6 years had passed. There wasn't a lot of like learnings in that because the whole system changed. Well, now we have 20 years of material and a lot of teams have tried to build right through the draft only. And I just think those teams are spinning their wheels. Whereas the ones that are rebuilding on the fly, you know, the Bruins did it at one point. They missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, you know, had a nice 2 years where they had David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy, among others, to their organization through their drafting in those 2 years. And then, you know, look where those are now, cornerstone pieces of the current team. But I don't think you want to get truly bad, even as much as it might be satisfying as a fan when you're so tired of your team and you just feel like there's nothing left. But I think it's got to be a process.
We know how you feel about rebuilding. We're going to have to get you to do some kind of franchise mode on Chell where you show us how a team should be properly retooled.
Do you think I could win a cup sooner than Jesse Blake? Or
Yes. I believe that. I believe you could. It's Easter weekend. I'm sure you've got Easter plans. I got to figure out my Easter plans. So we're going to head on out of here pretty early. Do you have a stick tap for this week?
Yeah, I'm going to do two.
Okay.
A current Leaf and a former Leaf.
Here we go.
The current Leaf would be Mark Giordano, who, you know, a nice moment on Thursday night. Scored a goal. It's only his third game since his father, Paul, died on February 16th. Suddenly, he was befelled by a concussion after that in a game at the end of February. Obviously, he's fallen down the depth chart with the deals they made to get Labushkin and Edmondson at the deadline. And so it was unclear when he might play again or how much he might play. It was actually not supposed to play in Thursday night's game, but Timothy Liljegren was sort of a quote unquote game time decision, couldn't go. And Giordano opens the scoring, only second goal of the season, not someone you expect to score. And, you know, raises his left, you know, hand up to the sky, something he promised his family would do in honor of his dad, Paul. Kind of remind me of, what was his name? Joey McDonald? Was it? No.
Are you thinking of the Blue Jays?
The Blue Jays, McDonald.
John McDonald.
Joey McDonald's former NHL goalie. But remember when he hit a home run returning after his dad's death, it turned out to be on Father's Day.
Yes.
When that home run happened, but you know, it was like an unlikely guy to have that happen in the moment. He was not a power hitter by any stretch, and it was emotional. It kind of reminded me of that for Mark Giordano. So I thought, you know, look, it, you don't want to trivialize what a difficult time it's been for him and his family. I'm talking about the oldest skater in the NHL, someone who's given his all trying to win a Stanley Cup. I thought that was nice. And then, of course, I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Zach Hyman, who's found his name in the media a lot this week. And you know, it's pretty, I made my thoughts clear on Twitter where I stand, but I think Zach is to go from the fourth line player at Michigan who barely played to someone who scored 51 and counting goals in the NHL this season at age 31. That's not an easy thing to do for anyone, no matter where you've come from. And I just want to shout out Zach as well.
All right, cool. I'll give my stick tap to Marty St. Louis, the Canadiens head coach who needs some time away for personal reasons. I believe his son had suffered a hockey injury, and he surprised his team earlier this week when they were in Colorado and returned behind the bench. Obviously, players on the team, they like him. They care a lot about him. And the fact that, you know, it seems like things are getting better with his family, and now he's able to coach again, full marks and a stick tap required for that. So I just wanted to shout out the Montreal Canadiens and Martin St. Louis for this week's stick tap, at least on my end. And yeah, good, cool that you were able to get two in there.
Yeah, I don't usually do that, but I didn't want to have to choose between one or the other. And they, you know, easy tie with them, former Leaf, current Leaf. I should say too to you, Julian, in the spirit of Easter, I will not ridicule any of your chocolate choices. You can have whatever chocolate you want this weekend, whatever the Easter bunny leaves at your door. I hope you enjoy it, my friend.
I hope you get all the aero bars you want, CJ. Hey, look.
So I hope so, too.
Hey, look. Hockey people being peaceful. Great. We need a little bit more of that after this week.
Yeah, that's true. But we're going to get feisty again. We got 3 weeks till the playoffs, bud.
Yeah, trust me. There's a lot of things to be feisty about over these next few weeks and into the postseason as well. Get your questions in now for our Monday show. For Ask CJ, we'll get to as many as we can, and subscribe to our podcast. Also, join the SDPN Discord. It's a fun time. Great communities being built over there. I promise you, it's a fun time. Anyway, enjoy your Easter weekend. We'll talk to you all on Monday. Bye.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK and McKenzie.